Hey, celebrate and rejoice. It's Rob Nichols and friends on Fly Me to the Moon, the podcast. Not to be confused with Fly Me to the Moon, the song, or the fragrance for men.
It's the cup that cheers, and it's nice to know that even if you are an armchair supporter, you've got a kind of warm-up act of a couple of non-entity northeast sides that are playing each other, I think, at a kind of derby that's held between Wearside and Tyneside before the real action of the day kicks off, of course, and Borough take on board Aston Villa. All of this and more in the latest edition of Fly Me to the Moon, the podcast companion to, of course, the Aston Villa fanzine. And, of course, we'll be considering the Chelsea double act. Rob Nichols, you have actually seen in person Finn Azaz, who might be playing tomorrow.
I have, yeah. He was just leaving the building, so to speak, before me. So it was obviously signed and sealed by that point. And yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, that they've actually said that he's available to play. Be brilliant, wouldn't it, if he scored?
An under-21 Irish international from, of course, Aston Villa. And yes, it could be written in the stars from that point of view, especially if Unai Emery decides to actually play a slightly weakened side. Only 30 places, though, separate Aston Villa from Middlesbrough. I won't say in which direction, I think we know that. And Chris Bartley has been busy reflecting on times past, including the tragedy of when he actually lost his autograph book after a devastating result of one of those FA Cup games. Was it Wycombe Wanderers? Was it Crystal Palace? Was it indeed another team entirely? Chris, have you recovered from losing your autograph book all those years ago, which presumably was one of those red autograph books with Middlesbrough on the front cover, which
collect over
the whole thing? Yeah, I know the feeling. Used it myself.
Yeah, with a little badge on the front.
Yeah, yeah, used it to collect autographs from the away sides at the Warwick Street entrance, basically, when you could actually approach players as they were actually leaving the ground and so on. There you go.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, that's very true.
Chris, talk us through your memories of times past and why you are quite optimistic that we could be in for a bit of a cup run in the FA Cup this time round.
Yeah, I think that some of the games I focused on weren't really some of the in lots of like fans' memories, like the real big games. But I think I just remember it of a, you know, kind of a time when the FA Cup was everything to, you know, for fans. I think it's quite strange now with the sort of attitude towards the FA Cup, where you have a culture where sometimes players are rested and everybody talks about focusing on the league. But at the time, the FA Cup was the one that you wanted to win, and you just put everything into them. You know, I was unlucky that I never saw some of the big games against Man United in the early 70s, but Man United just fielded their best teams, and everybody fielded the best teams for all the FA Cup games. But it was really exciting, and I think in every season it was always, it's going to be our year. And at that time we'd never progressed to beyond the FA Cup quarterfinals, but it was really exciting. And it was, you know, I think on a couple of those occasions, on the games I reflect on, we in the 74-75, we were flying with Jack Charlton. We were so high in the league, and everyone was saying, it's going to be our year. And when we got Birmingham in the quarterfinals, we'd already beaten them twice, 3-0 at home and 3-0 away. So people just couldn't believe it when we went to St Andrews and got beat 1-0. There was lots of talk at the time about Jack Charlton wanting to draw 0-0 and bring them back to Ayrton Park. I don't know how much truth in that one was, but it was so exciting. And obviously there was the fourth round game in that 74-75 season, where we beat Sunderland 3-1 at home, where we had that blue and black kit, and it was such an exciting, I remember it so well, even though the outcome didn't kind of work out.
And the reason, Chris, clearly you didn't see the Manchester Uniteds of the time were because you were actually a decent school attendee and you went to go to school, because obviously with power cuts and various other things, if memory serves, the United game was actually in the middle of a week.
That's right, yeah.
In an afternoon. So obviously, you know, this is a kind of genetic predisposition to education, which you've passed on to your son, Thomas, who clearly, again, given the choice between attending school and seeing a Borough match, would have to, heartbreaking though it might be, take the educational aspect. Thomas, you've returned successfully from Port Vale, the second highest ground above sea level in the country, a piece of information that indeed our erstwhile editor Rob Nichols, I believe, passed on for you. And I do like your comparison between that and, of course, the Peruvian height above sea level, which I showed a kind of reflection. But that was obviously another stage forward in another cup run, etc. Do you share your dad's passion for the cups? And is there something still special about the FA Cup, especially this upcoming game against Aston Villa?
Yes, I do. And I think that, you know, obviously we're in an interesting stage at the moment where we have these two big games coming up in the next week. But it still feels as if at the same time we're not totally out of playoff consideration, even if it's a bit of an uphill struggle. So there will be people who, you know, in the name of pragmatism or whatever, would be saying it's time to concentrate on the league or whatever. But I think that the cups give you an opportunity that the league simply doesn't, and a chance to play these really, really big teams and just prove how good we can be. I mean, I think, you know, when we played, obviously, against Manchester United and Tottenham a couple of years ago in the FA Cup, it just showed how good that team could be, particularly the Tottenham performance. And, you know, who doesn't want that? You know, people might say you don't want people looking out for you in draws or, you know, even, you know, overestimating your potential. But, you know, you want to be winning matches. You want to have matches on TV and BBC and etc. So, yeah, I definitely do share a passion for the Cups.
Well, with the words fabulous foam fingers and red and white curly comedy wigs adorned by many, we come to Sean Rye. Sean, your hopes and thoughts. I mean, Thomas has already mentioned Joss Coburn there, who seems to be back on scoring form. Wouldn't it be nice if he could actually get a couple of goals tomorrow or indeed on Saturday?
Most definitely. And Coburn's a good example, isn't he, of young players who have the opportunity to sort of not put themselves in a window in the case of other clubs taking them. But obviously, there'll be a big TV audience. It's a chance to showcase how good you are. And, you know, we don't play football on paper, because if we did, you know, we wouldn't have struggled against Newport County and the likes. So it's a great opportunity, I think.
And speaking of great opportunities, I have to say that this time round, if we were awarding the wonderful no prize for best carved out use of the English language, I think that would certainly actually go for the gentleman who came up with the sentence, "The detractors may say that this is a distractor." Detractors and distractor in the same sentence. Rob Nichols, you're clearly on a roll.
Yes, I had to try and, yeah.
It's
I had to try and live up
you...
to these three gentlemen. Yeah, to try their standards. Yeah.
It's always good if you can use some alliteration. So, Rob, what's the general feeling now? I'm not sure whether we'll be able to have any of the press conference, but clearly the message is, yeah, we know this is on TV, but Michael Carrick would like a good turnout, obviously, for the Saturday traditional 5 o'clock FA Cup start.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's the concern that it's kind of been... Well, we haven't come on to it yet, but obviously we've got a semi-final to play in a couple of days afterwards. So there's the worry, isn't there, that it will be in lots of people's minds. It's less of that's the one that they're going to focus on, and that the team as well, that we'll try and keep everybody fit and hold them back for that. But you just cannot pass up opportunities to play the, in many respects. Well, they were the form team in the country up until about 2 weeks ago, and they're fast becoming our nursery club as well, aren't they? At least for January signings, anyway. But yeah, there've been so many really great sort of third round games over the years, and whether it's us playing non-league teams like Wickham Wanderers or Barrow, or going to Nuneaton Borough as they were then called, but I remember a Man United game that was on TV at the Riverside, and it was quite a small crowd because I think that because the prices were quite high for it. But yeah, we beat Man United because it was televised as well and it was changed for TV, the kickoff time. But we beat Man United and it was a phenomenal match. And it was like one that people remembered afterwards, that all that had been there. And so yeah, I think there's a Carrick wants the fans there. He knows the fans can be the big weapon that can make all the difference in trying to level it up with Aston Villa. And making it an occasion, making it something that's it's something we've battled away in the League Cup, away game after away game after away game. And now suddenly we've got these two big plum home games, and let's make the most of them.
We need to briefly talk about some of the erratic results that ensures that Middlesbrough maintain their 3 points behind the playoff sequence in, of course, the Championship. I mean, we'll come to you again, Rob. With respect to Rotherham, was it a fluky result in the end of the day that they actually got 3 points against Borough, or was it just a case of, well, if Bramall will actually look to have a miss hit cross, it'll loop in and therefore and then it's all over.
Yeah, they were very lucky, Rotherham, and but at the same time, obviously we should have taken our chances. It was a clear penalty that was ridiculous not to have given it. But yeah, we've got to start. The lesson is that if you don't take your chances, you can be caught out in that way. And I suppose going to Huddersfield, you could say there was parts of that match where it was the other way around, where Huddersfield were well on top, but Carrick was quite canny tactically, bringing on Matt Clark. It's he sort of stopped the rot as far as Dyke-Steele had to go off injured, and we were suddenly becoming really vulnerable down the wing. And Clark coming on and shuffling the pack at the back gave us a sort of firm foundation to go forward. And obviously Johnny Howson missed the penalty, which was a brilliant save by the young debutant keeper. But then he scored from the corner. It wasn't quite a reversal of Rotherham, but it was in terms of who was on top, because it was a fairly mixed game. But still, it just shows you've got to take your chances.
You mentioned obviously a few interesting Borough players. Dana Moltz writing in the current edition of Fly Me to the Moon raises three particular names. Morgan Rodgers, of course, fine City performer there from Manchester City, that would be. Senny Dieng, who of course leaves us for a time, and Rav Vandenberg. I mean, do you feel as though in terms of the recruitment, I mean, we talked at the start of the season, of course, about how Kieran Scott was an interesting appointment from that point of view. Do you feel as though they're getting it right? And does obviously Finn Azez kind of suits the whole sort of system and hopefully help that final second half push in the season?
Yeah, it's a very different sort of feel to the start of this season, in the way that we went for we signed a lot of players, a lot of young players, a lot of young talent, and maybe we were asking too much of them all to settle straight away. You had players like Silvera coming from Australia as well, so you and Engel coming from Denmark. So they were not only like settling into a new league, they were settling into a new country, and maybe it was too much to ask. But when they did settle down and sort of mesh together, we put on that tremendous run, and it's been largely injuries, I think, that have upset everything. So I think that the idea of building for the future, in a way, it should stop us being in the position that we were at the start of the season, in that we'd lost key players, hadn't we? We'd lost Tchouba Akpom with all those goals. We'd lost Cameron Archer, who was the second highest scorer. And let's not forget that Force has been injured for most of the season. He was the third highest scorer as well. But we'd lost so many key players. We'd lost the key providers as well as the scorers. So we're sort of mindful that we shouldn't be in that position again. Yeah, you mentioned Dana mentioned those three players, and they've been. I mean, Rav's an absolute colossus, and he's only 19. Morgan Rodgers, as with Tom Glover, the goalkeeper, shows the benefit of rotating for cup matches, because they've played all the way through the cup matches, and suddenly Morgan Rodgers has really found his feet and form and confidence to play in the league, and Glover. was able to step in when Sandy Dieng first got injured and then went off to Africa. So without having done that, we would be in well, those players wouldn't be in the position they are, and the club would be a lot worse off.
Chris, as the authentic Borough historian within the team, I think I'm often reminded of the classic Tony Mowbray diving header against Aston Villa, not in a cup game, but in a game which was fairly critical in terms of promotion back in, I think, the mid 1987, 87, 88, that sort of area from that point of view. Do you feel as though we're due another good result against Aston Villa? And despite some of the concerns and fears of folks such as Ian Smith, for instance, that the winning is definitely there.
I do think that, and I do remember that game. I think it was February 1988, and we just, I think it was in the midst of those epic cup games against Everton. And it was really strange because I think we were kind of going head to head with Aston Villa at that time. It did feel like a cup game, even though it was kind of, it was just obviously there was the we were a long way ahead of the end of the season, but I remember when Mogga got that headed goal just in the last few minutes, it did feel as though we'd kind of won a cup tie, and it wasn't just the was it 2 points then? I can't remember. Was it 3 points that we gained? I can't remember when they changed it over, but it had all the feel of a cup game when Mowbray scored that goal. And yeah, I think I know Sean makes a reference in his article about kind of forgetting about the league and things like that, and just like kind of celebrating the occasion. And I think it doesn't, of course, we know that we're playing like a top class team, but you don't need to worry too much about positions and everything because it just all depends on what happens on the day. And I think I'm sure Carrick won't be instilling any fear in the team when we're going into the game or the Chelsea game. So I think we've just really got to go for it, really. I mean, I think Aston Villa will rest players, but they've obviously got such a good squad that that shouldn't make too much difference. But
Is it the
yeah, I think
squad
we've
or is
just
it the
got to go
manager?
for it.
Because the squad, in many ways, is broadly the same as under Steven Gerrard, a man who's having tremendous success, almost Wayne Rooney levels of success in the Saudi Arabian League these days, and could well be available in the not too distant future. I mean, is it critical to that? And we talked earlier, obviously, in the season about how important it was that Steve Gibson, happy birthday, upcoming Steve, of course. 66, eh? In terms of that scenario, the manager can be critical. And the one thing you can say about Unai Emery is he does seem to have, apart from his Arsenal time, which wasn't that unsuccessful, I didn't feel, a good track record.
Yeah, I think the squad isn't drastically different to the one that he inherited from Steven Gerrard. But yeah, I think it is a lot to do with the guidance, the coaching, and yeah. So I think it's just kind of trying to. It's a good challenge for Carrick, isn't it? I'm sure he'll be relishing just as the players will be of trying to kind of outwit these like really good managers like Emery and
And Pochettino.
say Pochettino. Yeah, he'd be really relishing the chance to kind of challenge them and try to outwit managers that he wants to be up there, doesn't he? I'm sure he's like very ambitious as a manager, so it's a real chance for him as well as the players.
Well, having just linked Michael Carrick in the as the Unai Emery or Pochettino of the Championship, let's move to Rob once again, if we can. We're going to talk to Thomas, obviously, and Sean about their thoughts and predictions for the Chelsea thing. But it's Billy Gates who is the subject of this latest Jimmy Flynn opus. Are you set and ready, Rob, to actually deliver this whole notion from a man who didn't really have a huge cup run, as far as I know, but at the same time, very much a legend when it comes to Ayresome Park days and more with respect to, obviously, Borough?
Well, actually, before we start, Alex, there's a picture. There's three pictures accompanying this article, and one of them shows him tackling George Best in the FA Cup.
There you go.
So he, And he played a tremendous
In a
performance,
match
actually, against the
that
Dolphins.
sadly couldn't be attended by Chris Bartley because he was too busy doing his schoolwork. Understandable.
Yeah. Indeed.
Okay, Rob, away you go.
Borough star Billy Gates was a one-club man who gained the affection of every Borough fan.
He joined Borough immediately on leaving grammar school and became an early beneficiary of football's new financial rule.
The year 1961 marked a historic transitional football stage, which saw the abolition of the maximum wage.
Attracting media attention, which he didn't seek, teenager Billy became the first footballer to earn £50 per week.
Talented Billy was soon into his professional stride and quickly became a mainstay at Borough's side.
An intelligent defender of the cerebral kind, a trained accountant with a calculating mind.
A fullback, centre half, and backline sweeper, Borough's aptly named defensive gatekeeper.
While crunching numbers was his off-field professional line, on-field he focused on the wearers of shirt number nine.
Blessed with an innate ability to read the game, formidable opponents he would effortlessly tame.
For 13 action-packed years, loyal to Borough, he stayed, and a memorable 330 games for the club he played.
Sadly, chronic migraine, a legacy of repeatedly heading a ball, brought an end to the career of a player who gave Burr his all.
Billy Gates, Borough's star with a very apt name, guarding the gates to Borough's defence was his on-field game. And there we are, Bill Gates, of course, who passed away on 21st of October 2023, losing his fight to chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE. Something else we've spoken about in times past, but at the same time, important is to acknowledge the sort of legacy that he actually leaves. Thomas, let's turn to you in terms of the cup games. Any predictions, first and foremost, for the game against Aston Villa before we talk Chelsea?
It's a tough one. Obviously, we always like to take a overtly optimistic perspective on this
If it
podcast,
helps,
but
Chris Sutton has predicted a 1-0 win for Middlesbrough. I'm just saying.
yeah, oh, okay. I'm going to use Chris Sutton as my scapegoat and also say 1-0 then, rather than saying something which is much more downward looking.
Yeah, I might go 1-1. Sean, what are your thoughts and predictions for the Villa game to start off with?
Well, again, like the lads, I like to be optimistic, as you know. I do think this season the cup has been a tonic for us, whereas in other seasons, maybe when we had the UEFA Cup, we had a bit of a hangover afterwards on playing on Sundays and stuff. But I actually think the cup has sort of been there for us to pick us up after a couple of disappointing league performances. So I'm going to actually go for a slender 2-1 win.
Yeah, so the traditional time we're actually producing this Fly Me to the Moon podcast literally on the eve of what I can't understand why traditionally the Thursday kickoff of the FA Cup third round, with of course Crystal Palace about to play Everton. So that makes perfect sense, doesn't it, to start the FA Cup on a Thursday and finish it on a Monday. Maybe they should actually just have one a day basically over the month of January and just work through on that basis. Chris, what's your prediction for the Saturday game against Aston Villa?
Yeah, I'm going to go for a 2-1-2, a 2-1 victory for
That
Middlesbrough.
was a formation, Chris, more than actually
2-1-2,
a
yeah.
prediction, really.
I meant two, the same as Sean. And I think Colburn is going to replicate that the Tony Mowbray heading thing in the latter stages. I think it's going to be a real close game, but I think it's going to be Colburn instead of Mowbray to seal the winner.
Lots of optimism, Rob. Do you share that? Is it a case of course, I'm going to go 3-0 to Borough.
No, I'm not going to go 3-0, but I'll go with Thomas and go for 1-0. And yeah, I wouldn't mind it if Colburn was the man to clinch it. Although maybe that new signing will come on as substitute and score in the last minute, and that would be really funny.
Does seem to be, a possibility from that point of view. But who would have thought we'd have Thomas or Rob agreeing with Chris Sutton? It just goes to show strange things can actually happen in the week in which Steve Gibson will be celebrating his 66th birthday. I'm just saying, happy birthday once again, Steve. Let's talk Chelsea. It's not a one-off game because obviously it's two legs. The first leg is at the Riverside. Thomas, does that mean that the odds are slightly more in Pochettino's favour? And let's face it, the way they've been bumbling along, they've hardly got a penny to scratch together to their name. Chelsea, Todd Bowley's had to obviously pull in his transfer scenarios and so on. Any thoughts about the system, given that, of course, you might well see Cole Palmer, you might well see Raheem Sterling, or neither of the above?
Yeah, I think you have to say it's an advantage, although I think we also thought it would be an advantage to us in the playoffs that we had the second leg at home against Coventry, and then it ended up not really being to our advantage.
Ever since you
So,
started staying and reporting from Coventry, of course, Thomas, this has clearly been,
yes.
a message. Mark Robins is
Yeah.
clearly paying attention to you and using you as a deep cover agent.
Yeah, so perhaps I'll go for a reverse result, actually, and say that we may 1-0 to Chelsea, but it will at least keep the second leg interesting.
Chris, again, one goes back to the days when I did actually attend the evening kickoff to see John Hickton score a goal against a certain side from Main Road back in those days. At that time, I realised my loyalties were going to be forever torn in that side of things there. Until, of course, a couple of weeks later, a 4-0 reverse took place at Main Road with Jed Keegan, Alan Oakes, and I think Peter Barnes scoring, amongst others, from that point of view. But any thoughts from yourself in terms of this home game against Chelsea, and then, of course, the second leg at Stamford Bridge?
This might seem as though I'm being overly optimistic, but I'm going for a 2-0 for Borough to replicate that 1988 playoff semi-final when we went head to head with them. Because I know everyone keeps saying about Chelsea, and quite obviously they do reference those the League Cup defeat and the FA Cup defeat, but the last time we did go head to head over two legs, we did beat Chelsea, and I'm sure everybody can remember that. So I'm going for a 2-0 win to Middlesbrough.
Sean, clearly the possibility of two trips to Wembley, possibly even a third if the playoffs is actually up and running. Any thoughts from yourself about the Carabao Cup, to give it its full name?
Well, I may be stereotyping, but I don't think those Premier League stars are going to enjoy a cold night in the north with
Are you saying the Riverside's
most
now replaced a wet, windy night in Stoke?
possibly words to that effect, let's say. But I don't think they'll relish it. Put it this way, I think there'll be a few woolly gloves being worn. And I think if we stop in the tie, I think the pressure then goes back on them to put the tie to bed. So I'm going to go for a 1-1.
Rob, this could obviously lead to a whole range of success and happinesses and Borough-style memories from that point of view. You've
Yeah.
heard the team's suggestions. What are you going to do? Go for yourself.
Yeah, I remember when we were semi-final under Lenny Lawrence, who's now caretaker at Hartlepool, isn't he? And we played Man United. I think it was 0-0 the first leg, and then we were narrowly beaten in extra time at Old Trafford. I don't think it'll be 0-0 this year, this time. I think it could be 1-1, like Sean said. I think Morgan Rodgers is suspended, isn't he, from having two yellow cards. He's the top scorer in the competition. I think I'm right in saying that. That's a bit of a blow for us. So we'll have to stay in the tie so that Morgan can come back in the second leg and score the winning goal.
Mike Baker writes, obviously, a very prescient final sentence in his particular article in Fly Me to the Moon, the magazine. If they could let us, that's Aston Villa, have Finn Azaz, I will even consider them a friend. Is that too drastic for Mike, or is it a case of now he realises that obviously this could be the final piece of the Borough jigsaw to actually ensure a memorable 2024?
Let's hope he's as successful as the two loan signings from Villa last season, as Ramsey and Cameron Archer really kind of lit up the Riverside along with Tchouba Akpom. So let's hope that he's going to be as successful as that, and this time we know that we don't have to give him back at the end of it.
Chris, I was fascinated to see that you raised the line of John Mahoney, Billy Ashcroft, and Stan Cummins, and also drew the parallel between John Neil's attacking Middlesbrough and Michael Carrick. I mean, given that you're probably the only person apart from Rob and myself who can even remember the golden shot with Ann Aston, I suppose we've mentioned that in these sort of days because it's something to do with darts and various other bits and pieces. Well, it wasn't darts, it was more kind of archery thing. But what are your thoughts in terms of, do you feel that actually, John Neil and Michael Carrick, they could be soul brothers at another time?
Yeah, I think there is so there's some real parallels between the type of football we played under John Neil and also with Michael Carrick. Very young players, always committed to playing attacking football as well. So I think there is some, there's some very clear parallels between the football that we used to play under John Neil and Michael Carrick. Yeah, with that experience as well. I mean, John Mahoney at the time was a very experienced player, and obviously we've got Johnny Howson, who's very experienced. So I still think you need that backbone of experience. But with a lot of young players, and that John Neil team was really good, which obviously brings us back to 1981 when it was all dismantled as well after that FA Cup defeat.
Billy Ashcroft, of course, who I believe actually had ballet lessons to actually help his balance. He joined us from Wrexham, which is another sort of area of the classic Billy Ashcroft, Stan Cummins, a classic epitome of the big one and the little one, basically. Or Borough's answer to John Toshack and Kevin Keegan, perhaps. Sean, I mean, I mentioned Ann Aston, golden shot. I'd say use YouTube. You can look up all sorts of things there. It's part of a particularly amusing thing, which had lots of LOL moments in terms of the views that's given by one contributor to Fly Me to the Moon, the paper edition, especially with respect to, of course, Wayne Rooney, who amazingly has actually now found himself out of employment with Birmingham City again, and probably available. So maybe when Sunderland decides to actually depart, do away with Michael Beale, Rooney could actually be in for that as well. Anyway, enough of such stuff. Sean, do you have anything else to add in terms of how things are going? Because we haven't talked about the league program. And of course, there are a couple of fixtures that still take place in January that relate to obviously Borough's championship fixtures.
Well, very quickly before we move on, I don't know if you've all seen Sunderland and the mess they're in with their fans putting up a welcome bar area for the Newcastle fans incoming. But anyway, have a look afterwards. It's quite funny. Yeah, the league form, like I said, it's been frustrating in the sense that we've picked up the points where we maybe didn't think we were going to get anything, and then just as we've allowed ourselves to think we're going to go on that ridiculous type of run we did last season, we sort of fall again. But to be honest, we've kept ourselves within distance, whether that's because a lot of the teams are beating each other or whatever the reason may be, we're still in with a shout. And if we've got plenty to play for and the cups to look forward to, I don't think we could have hoped for too much more given how many players we've had out. So no complaints here. I think we're still in with a shout of plenty of football to come.
And the glamour continues, Rob, because obviously after the home game against Aston Villa in the FA Cup third round, the Carabao Cup semi-final home game against Chelsea, it's the joy of another trek down to London to actually meet up with the mighty Millwall.
Yeah, the new den.
The
Yes.
new den.
Yeah. At least there's no, as far as I know, there's trains this year. I remember last year it was really difficult to get there. You had to get off a tube and walk for half an hour through a very friendly area, a notoriously friendly area of London.
It's kind of London's answer to South Bank in the days of Paul Daniels, perhaps, where any cat, according to Paul, who actually had a tail was regarded as being not necessarily a positive cat, shall we say.
But yeah, it'd be great to get a win, but I think realistically, it's looking more and more like likely this season that if we can sneak in the playoffs, that we'll have done very, very well. We've just lost too many players to injuries, but we've got a great chance to make some history with these cup matches, and that could really sort of, as has been alluded to in this conversation already, it's sort of it the cups have sort of got us back on the straight and narrow again for the league. That some of those victories have really boosted us and boosted some of the players. So yeah, just looking forward to lots of football in January, and hopefully the weather allows us to play that football.
Indeed. Okay, how can people actually subscribe to the remaining issues of Fly Me to the Moon, the magazine? Unless, of course, there is a bonus cup run that actually takes us to home ties in the fourth round, fifth round, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, this is quite a rarity to do a cup fanzine, actually. So, done very few over the years, and even rarer to actually sell it on an evening. because you can it's really hard. You can't see the change in your hand or whatever. I forgot about that. but you can subscribe to it by going to fmttnborough.com, and there's a subscription thread there, or and there's a fanzine shop in which the subscription price is there for the last five issues, which will include this very issue that we're promoting tonight.
And let's have some good news for a change, because obviously we've had a number of folk who've actually departed, and including obviously a whole side that's departed. Mask Town, of course, have obviously gone, or Mask Town to be precise. Good to actually see that we've had some good news for a five-star Bergen borough couple who got engaged in York on New Year's Eve, and a new borough baby has actually arrived as well. Different couple, but I think you
Yeah.
want to mention those as well, really.
Yeah. Dr. Tosh Warwick, Middlesbrough's history man, and his wife Liberty have given birth to a little baby. I think it was 19th of December. She's already been pictured in lots of borough gear. So that was pretty good. And well, I've said Bergen because Beata has been is a regular. He's got a season ticket at the Riverside. He's a regular, irregular, should we say. He comes over every season to see matches, and he has done since Borough played Ran Bergen in 1974, I think it is. So he's been a long time supporter, and he's got engaged to Truda, who will have to put up with his ground hopping exploits, because I think he's been to over 200 football grounds in his time. But yeah, great news. And they were in York. Yeah, Beata had been to the Huddersfield game, and then they were in York and invited a couple of us over, and then surprised us by getting engaged.
And a final RIP, of course, sadly, to the memory of Ray Robertson, who's also passed. Rob, any final thoughts about one of the great old school local reporters who will have regularly contributed to the Gazette, amongst others?
Yeah. When you're talking about the Man United games, those epic games in the past, because there were several cup matches. The Northern Echo often used to bring out like a FA Cup special, and Ray was the man that wrote a lot of the copy in those. And he was actually from County Durham. He covered Bishop Auckland in Bishop Auckland's sort of halcyon amateur days, and then he came over to Middlesbrough, and he covered the World Cup in 1966. And I've spent a lot of time with Ray over the years, because he just had some incredible memories about all the teams that he'd seen, and all the players and all the experiences, talking to the managers. A very different times, but just a lovely man who gave as much of his time and as much of his memories as you wanted. Sadly he's passed away recently, but great guy.
And what better way if he's writing in heaven on a Middlesbrough 3-0 victory against the FA Cup against Aston Villa. So there we are. It's a wrap for this particular edition. We may well be back for another podcast before the next magazine comes through. But to Chris Bartley, to Thomas Bartley, to Sean Rye, of course, and to Rob Nichols. Rob, you know what we need to do now for those final few seconds after three. One, two, three.
Come on, Borough.
Open Borough.
Open Borough.
Open Borough.
The Borough.
A big few days for your team. How do you approach one of the form teams in the country, Aston Villa, and then 3 days off the back of it, Chelsea coming to your old patch?
Yeah, big challenge for us. I think it's great though. You know, it's fantastic. We've got to enjoy the challenge. For me, you want to play against the best teams and best players individually and as a group. And listen, they're on an unbelievable season so far, and got some really, really good players and obviously World Cup. So it's a big challenge, but it's great. You know, it's a one-off game for us. It's fun, and we can give it our best, see what it takes. Because football's funny at times, it throws up results that maybe shouldn't happen. You know, we know that this is one that probably shouldn't go our way on paper, but we'll do our best to try and flip that.
You've had such a hectic, festive fixture schedule, and I suppose even going back towards the end of November, I think it's 11 matches in 36 days. Are you at a stage where you need a rest, you need a break? You probably could have done without two teams of the magnitude that are set to come here.
Plenty of rest in June. Don't worry about it. No, I've got no problem, obviously, with the amount of games. I think to be successful or to go further in competitions, you've got to play extra games, and it's great. What we want, you know, and so be it. further forward in cup competitions is, for me, is a real plus. The thing that's made it a little bit more challenging, obviously, is the amount of injuries we've had and players that we've not been able to choose from, which means the boys that have played have been pushed that little bit harder. But as it stands now, you know, we've had a few days rest since the last one, and it's two good games to look forward to in isolation, really, and yeah, look forward to what we can do.
I think you've got 11 or 12 players out between being injured and, of course, got the African combinations as well. Is there a chance any of them might be back for this one on Saturday, or are you having to weigh up the fact you've got another huge game on Tuesday against Chelsea? You might need to save them for that.
Yeah, it's right in the balance, to be honest. I think there is boys coming back. Is it too soon? Is it not? Some boys have played an awful lot of football, and so yeah, we're right in the mix of trying to get that balance right. Taking this game is a one-off game, and giving ourselves as big a chance as we can, because we look forward to it and we want to try and get through. But there is games coming up as well, so it's a constant balance, which is fine. But hopefully we will have one or two back in and around the group. Just how much that can be part of it is the question.
I think you said earlier in the week after the game on Monday that there was four players that should be back in training this week. Hackney, Latila, Crooks, and was it Force maybe?
He'll be a bit later.
He'll be a bit later. So of those three, are any of them got a chance on Saturday?
They're back training, yeah, a little bit. Is that's the decision we're kind of making of what's each individually of where they're at. So hopefully they'll be part around the summer, and it'll give the boys a bit of a boost and strengthen the squad.
How pleased are you with the way they've dealt with everything that's come their way, given the injury problems you've had? And you've obviously picked up some good results over the last few weeks.
Yeah, we've had some good ones. We've had some mixed ones. I think all in all, if you had said to me, you know, after Christmas, from what we've kind of had to go through, we're here now, kind of feels a bit like a fresh start, especially with these, you know, almost a mid-season break, but we've got two games in the middle of the two cup competitions to then go after that. It feels that the way the group is and getting a couple back for the next league game, it feels almost like, right, we're 4 points off the playoffs and we're going in the cup, and it's everything to play for, because when we get the next league game, then we can be excited to try and achieve something after that. So it's, yeah, it is what we hope for more, of course we would, but you know, for now it's quite exciting to know what's coming up and what we're capable of trying to achieve.
Just a couple more from me. Just looking at your bench on Monday against Coventry, I think you only had one senior player on there. When you look at that, obviously you see you've got a few lads coming back. What does that mean in terms of the transfer window? Are you needing to add in January, and if so, to what extent?
Yeah, well, I think we're always looking to add. I think every club is. It's not always easy this time of year, but for sure we're always trying to improve anyway. There is the balance of not a knee-jerk one just because someone's out for a couple of weeks to try and get someone in. I think the bigger picture doesn't always fit in. And the fact that we have got players coming back, we should have, and numbers-wise, should be a lot stronger in the coming weeks. So, yeah, we'll see what for January develops.
And Wiley reported over the last 24 hours that you've got one in the building and trying to get it over the line in the shape of Finn Azaz from, ironically, Aston Villa. Anything you can tell us as to where that deal is?
Yeah, I can say it's close. It's not. We're still waiting on a few things to be finalised, but we're very hopeful that that will happen pretty soon, yeah.
And if that gets done, will he be able to play on Saturday?
He's available.
Yeah. Thanks, mate.
I mean, Aston Villa, high-flying, so a great opportunity for you to see how much your squad has progressed.
Yeah, I think first and foremost for the freshness of the game, of a one-off game, for the players, for the club, for the supporters. And it's one of those games where you can really give your best and enjoy it. And there's for the players to test themselves against players that were obviously right at the top of the game and doing very well in the best league. So it's a great challenge for us. It's one you know, we can really, really get our teeth into and look forward to.
I mean, you have obviously a huge game on Tuesday night, and you've spoken about depleted resources here. So is there a temptation or pressure on you on Saturday to you're going to have to manage those resources carefully, aren't you, to protect your team for Tuesday night?
course, there's a constant one really where you're trying to get the balance right, but and understanding. Yeah, listen, we still want to try and win the game tomorrow. Tuesday is not the only game at the moment, you know. So we have to get the balance right. There's some boys can play that can't play on Tuesday. Some boys that are coming back might get involved, might not get involved. And there's some boys, as I said, that might need a rest. That's the nature of it is. But that doesn't mean we're not taking this game lightly at all. You know, we're really looking forward to it. And Tuesday is that little bit further away at the moment.
I mean, Middlesbrough have special memories of a fantastic cup run two seasons ago, less special last season, but the FA Cup going on a run will mean something to Middlesbrough, won't it? Despite the fact that you've already had one cup run this season.
Yeah, it's magic, you know. The cup has been good to me at certain times and given me some great memories and great moments. And of course, you know, everyone in this draw right now is looking for a cup run and to have special memories. It's not possible for everybody. It's not so maybe easier for some to have a run than others. We're realistic. We know what we're up against, but it doesn't stop us from looking forward to trying to achieve.
Michael, thank you. Good luck.
Michael, what have you made of the job that Emery's done since he's come in at Villa?
Yeah, I think he's hugely respectful and full of admiration for it. I think consistency of the results and the level of performances against obviously arguably some of the best teams around, that's put them in that bracket now of being one of the best teams around because they've been able to perform and get the results like that. So yeah, I think he's done a fantastic job.
Just looking at your experience in the FA Cup, how much is that your experience as a player, how much does that help you as a manager to motivate a dressing room for these big games and to kind of get them in the right headspace, I suppose?
Yeah, I'll be honest, games like these take care of themselves in terms of motivation and for as a player, you know, there's certain games that they might need a bit of help or guidance or a nudge in a certain direction, but when you get games like this, it takes care of itself, you know, great motivation, great enthusiasm, great energy towards the game, and the boys are really looking forward to it.
And I suppose the FA Cup as a competition, you know, you look at some of the results, some of the draws it pulls up, you look at the early stages, what it means to the clubs further down the pyramid, you look at the derby that's happening up the A19 at the weekend. Do you still get the sense that players really appreciate the significance of the FA Cup in English football?
I'd hope so, yeah. I mean, I do personally. I think it's such a unique competition. It's got a certain magic about it. Competitions, that sense of achievement, or big wins or big occasions, you know, it's priceless. So I know speaking to the boys here and me and the staff and the club, you know, we treat it as serious and have that, you know, that's the dream, isn't it? And the supporters can dream and hope and come and look forward to the game and see what we can achieve together.
That's great. Thanks, Michael.
Michael, your old teammate Wayne Rooney lost his job earlier this week. I mean, when you look what's happened to Wayne, Steven Gerrard and Frank Lampard, does that just show how tough it is even for elite players like you were yourself?
Yeah, of course it's not easy, it's challenging. I think player or not player, it almost becomes irrelevant in some ways, you know. I think you're judged for how good or how successful you are, or what you're achieving in the role that you're in, and currently in this role, and the fact that I played a little bit and had some experience, yeah, it'll help, and hopefully it'll help me and to understand certain situations. But ultimately, in the end, the fact that I played a little bit, me sitting here now, the boys are playing tomorrow, I'm in a totally different role. It kind of, in some ways, becomes irrelevant. You know what's gone on in the past. It's about what's next.
Knowing Wayne as you do, would you expect him to bounce back from that and go straight back into that?
Yeah, for sure, yeah. I hope so, but yeah, for sure. I know Wayne well in his character and the drive and, you know, you're saying about the player to manage that and as a person, but as a player for what he achieved and how he did it and the level of motivation and the knowledge that he has and his intelligence, I think he's... he's a football natural, and hopefully he'll have many years and many successful years in the game and whatever he chooses to do next.
When you asked about Unai Emery earlier, I mean, in his first spell in England, he found it tough and ended up losing his job. Does that just go to show how difficult it is for an experienced, successful manager?
Yeah, I think history shows that there's been some incredible managers that at certain points hasn't quite gone to plan, and they've had a setback, and I think that's it's part of life, really. You know, it's certainly part of my playing career, the ups and downs, and some people remember you for the good days. There's days that not so good in there as well, and it's the same in this role now. You know, you can go and have a really good spell, and everything's great, and then a few results and questions and doubts, and that's the nature of what we're involved in, and I accept that. You got to be ready for the next challenge and keep trying to make that difference, really.
You said earlier that the FA Cup have been good to you, you were the Youth Cup as well, didn't you, as a player? But most of your career, I suppose, you would have played in teams that have gone into these ties as favourites. How does the mindset have to change when you're perhaps going as an underdog?
Yeah, I think you've got to have the belief and the confidence that you can perform and perform well, and you're capable of winning the game. That's the start. You know, you have to believe it. If you don't believe it, then you haven't got a chance. So, be realistic. I think there's a way of that. There's a different mental test in some ways when you're the favourite and you're totally expected to win. There's a talking about the motivation before and how do you have to motivate the players. Sometimes that can be the difference. But from now for us, it's a great opportunity. You know, it's. For the players to test themselves and to have a game like that, brilliant, absolutely brilliant, and hopefully they'll thrive and they'll take the game to another level again and use the experience to become better players and a better team.
Thank you.
If we can keep it to three,
Michael, what's your view on Wayne's dismissal as 13 games enough as a manager to implement your ideas properly?
I'm not sure it's for me to say whether it's enough or not. I'm a bit disappointed for Wayne, knowing him as a friend, and I know he'll bounce back. I know he'll be a success, and he's too good, he's too knowledgeable, and he's had too much experience to not use that in the right way. Unfortunately, the role is the role, and you get judged on it. But certainly, is it long enough or not long enough? It's not really for me.
And of the so-called golden generation of England players, when you're really the last man standing in this country at the moment.
I wasn't part of that golden generation. You put me in that bracket now. I never used to be.
Why do you think it hasn't worked out? Why do you think it hasn't worked out for some of the others who have given?
I think we're just so quick to judge that it hasn't worked out. Right? The boys are early 40s, some of them boys that you're talking about. Yeah. There's so much ahead, and there's so many good managers that maybe are a little bit older that have had different setbacks through their time.
Yeah.
So I think it's dangerous to say someone who's such a success at an extreme level to say that you're writing someone off. I think this is part of what I just said about the ups and downs. Good people will end up rising to the top.
Yeah, thank you.
Does football surprise you how brutal it can be still? You know, you've obviously spent your entire life within the game. Does it still have the ability to shock you when you see a decision like that?
I don't think it surprises you, really. I don't think it surprises. There's an acceptance, really, now of how it works and what it's about. It's getting more probably extreme in terms of judging whether it's what's a success, what's not good enough, not good enough. But in terms of surprising, no.
You've never had any growth by going to management. You took your time before you took your first management job. Can you understand why top players, particularly those you know who've had great stellar careers like you have and some of your other generation have had, why they would avoid it? Why they would not bother putting themselves through it?
No, I just think it's a different thing. It's a different role. It's a different. Just because playing doesn't mean management suits you. It doesn't mean you'll be good at it. I think it's told it two different roles and. Experience can help, yeah, of course, because you've been surrounded by certain situations, you've gone through it, and you can't. But really, being in the seat that I'm in now is very different to that role. It's different skills, it's different approach, different in so many ways, you know. So just because the player, as I said there, that after the time becomes irrelevant, really, and it's what I can do now and what I can do next with the group of players that I've got. So, I can understand why everyone thinks that, and there's been so many incredible footballers that have been incredible managers. There's been some that maybe say they weren't very good footballers, but have been incredible managers, and vice versa. So it's not black or white, yes or no, you know, there's somewhere in the middle.
Would you be fair to say that the players in that dressing room don't care about Michael Carrick as a footballer anymore? It's entirely what you are. Is that the same when you were a player? You care what your manager...
Some of them probably don't even remember
anyway. You know what I mean? Like when you play for managers, you think their football history, in terms of what they did as a player, that didn't bother you at all?
It depends. I think there's a freshness, I think. Probably when I first got here, because I was in some ways fresh from playing and it's my first role, then probably no more for that. I like to think the longer I'm here and the longer the boys get to know me and we work together, then again that becomes irrelevant. It's what we can do together, really. So in terms of how they think, you'll have to ask them. Yeah, I don't know, but hopefully as time goes on, I don't want to be the ex-player, really. I want to be the coach or the manager and treat them.
Thank you very much.
On the injury front, Michael, is there any update on arm scans?
Not yet, we're still waiting actually, but we're hoping that it'll be a small number of weeks rather than anything else, but we're not sure yet.
Yeah. And just someone we haven't asked for an update on for a little bit, Paddy McNair, how's he?
Yeah, Paddy's had a couple of little setbacks with his back, so again, probably a number of weeks, but not too far ahead.
Yeah. And just on the transfer front, I know coming into the window, you know, we spoke a lot about the planning that had gone into it, and obviously it's not easy, but so early in the window, you're going to make that breakthrough. I mean, does that justify that work and show, you know, how hard you are working on that front?
Yeah, I hope so. Of course, there's a lot of groundwork and work to be forward out of. It's all right having a plan, and sometimes things need to fall into place. And you know, sometimes it's dangerous to make the last minute or the knee-jerk decision. I think it's not always easy to do that. So we do try to be a little bit ahead. Listen, I'm not saying we're going to get everything right. We'll try to, and we'll try to give ourselves the best chance. So we're happy with the way it started. And,
What is it you like about Finn, Michael? And is it kind of those three players in the yard when you slot it?
Yeah, naturally, he fits into that spot. He played well against us, obviously, when we played him down there. But he's had a terrific season, and he's at a really good age. He's had a lot of experience at the age and through the leagues and different scenarios, and moved away from home at a young age and grew up quite quickly. And so there's a lot of that side as well as the football side of where he's in his career, and he's at a really good stage to take the next step. So. Fingers crossed, it gets sorted out quite quickly, and we can have him in the building part of the group.
I know obviously Riley and Sammy are with. We've got plenty of options in those attack midfield areas. Alex Gilbert, is there a chance that he'll go out on loan or something?
Yeah, maybe. Listen, we have got some options, and again, it's what certain players need at certain stages of the career. At the moment, Alex is a big part of the group and in and around it, and looking to play a big part. Obviously, as the window goes on, we'll make a call on him.
It seems an obvious or a daft question, really, given the role he's played in the first half of the season. Obviously, Josh, there was a lot of talk about loan in the summer for him. There's no chance of that being on the cards this month, given his role. No. What does that say then about how impressive he's been in the first half of the season?
Yeah, again, it's giving players the opportunity, giving them the chance to see what they can do is important. Going back to the question before about not being too judgmental on a week to week or over a month, and trying to give the lads a chance over a period of time. And Josh has he's improved so much since he come back, really, pre-season. In terms of experience, game time helps out, training with the boys, different environment, and naturally the age he's at. So he's done really well and come back from his injury particularly well. So we're delighted with him.
Great, thank you.
Henry, is that okay?
Yeah, sorry, Michael, just on
players to managers, if you look at some of the most successful managers recently, a lot of them have actually played in midfield. And you look at Xabi Alonso obviously coming through a part of Leverkusen. Do you think there's something in that mindset that you would have had as a player which actually lends itself to being going on and being a good manager?
The only thing I can really say on that is you're right in the thick of the game playing in midfield, so you're kind of connected, or you should be connected to kind of all areas of the game. So hopefully you'd like to think there's an understanding there. But again, there's a case for it, and there's plenty of cases to say that it doesn't really make a difference. So, but yeah, if you said in terms of the experience of how I see the game, it's a little bit of, you know, when I was playing, what kind of relationships did I have, what did I see, what worked, what didn't work, and it comes from being in the middle of the pitch where you can kind of feel and get used to everything around you.
How important can the crowd be tomorrow, Saturday, sorry?
Yeah, huge. I think these next two games is much as we play our part, the players play their part. I think the supporters are a massive, massive part of it, to create that energy and that support and understand that there might be times in the games when it's hard, when we need them the most, and really get behind the players and give them that boost and feeling of real positivity in the stadium. Please come, bring your real voices and your singing voices and your support for the lads, because we'll need it, and that will help us hopefully to get some good results.
Can we win?
Of course we can, yeah. No doubt we can win. We're realistic. We know it's going to be tough. Both games, it'll be just as tough. But yeah, of course we can win.
Hey, celebrate and rejoice! It's Rob Nichols and friends on Fly Me to the Moon, the podcast.